Hello and welcome to another episode of Fight On Montana. I am your host, Adam Healy. And before we get to our episode, I would like to remind you to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast at. You can find the podcast on Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio as well. You can get a hold of us at Twitter at Fight On Montana. You can get a hold of us at Instagram at Fight On Montana, and also our Facebook page at Fight On Montana as well. Make sure to follow us on all those platform and social media outlets. So let's not skip a beat. Let's get into our episode. We have the great pleasure in having former Grizz basketball player with us today, Kareem Jamar, with us.
Hello, Kareem.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. So, hey, what have you been up to these days, man?
Right now, I'm in Great Falls right now, just waiting to receive the contract that I need and want. But I actually just started. I mean, I've been working kids out. I mean, I always come back to Great Falls like for a month every year. Sometimes it's been longer, depending on my professional situation. So I've been training kids. Usually I just do some, like, train a couple kids here and there. And then I was convinced kind of to do it on the bigger scale. So I actually had my first skills clinic last weekend.
Awesome.
And that turned out pretty cool. So that was good. It was fun. And then now I'm going to do another girls one this upcoming weekend. So, yeah, I'm just trying to stay busy and just teaching some kids a little basketball.
Awesome. Awesome. Is that something that maybe – after basketball you want to get into, like, create like a sports complex or a training complex?
I think that would be, like, for sure that would be super fun. I was told, like, people always told me, like, when I was playing that I probably would be a good coach, but I haven't really, like, coaching and personal training, like individual training, is a little different, you know, like,
yeah,
coaching is more like sets and stuff like that, which is fine, but I haven't had time to, like, actually dig into, like, the philosophies and stuff like that. And I'm not the guy to, like, want to coach if I don't know what I'm doing. You know what I mean? I just don't want to be out there just because I can motivate really good and I do know the game. But so personal training is good because it's still just fundamentals, and kids in Montana lack the, like, the normal footwork that they should have at
certain age.
It's good to do that. So it's fun.
Awesome. And so, like, contracts, are you waiting for a contract to come in? Do you have, like, people that are coming after you, or?
Yeah, so this is, I mean, right now, at this point in my career, it's like, yes, I can go play, like, somewhere and anywhere for X amount of money, low money, but it has to be about the situation, obviously, in a certain league. You know, every league is different. There's so many, but I want to get to a situation where it's going to further my, you know, further my basketball career in the right way, that I'm going up, that I'm trending up. So that's more the situation. So just about picking the right one and going to the right country, pretty much.
Awesome. Awesome. So how is it to play overseas?
It's different. It's different. It's, how would I put it? It's very dog eat dog world. Like, so different from college. It's kind of like a culture shock. At Montana, I had, like, I mean, it was just amazing. Like, all my teammates were pretty close. We had a pretty close team. So coming in, you know, you do that. You eat together. You obviously go out together, stuff like that. And it's different when you get across the water. You might go out with the other American, two other Americans, and that's about it. So it's like kind of like you're on your own. You're really – and it's tough, you know what I mean? Because that builds chemistry off the court, you know what I mean? Like, that builds, like, it for on the court, I mean. So when you can't do that, then it's kind of like you're in your own little bubble, but also still have to kind of play team basketball, but also still try to, like, get numbers, because that's the only way you keep playing in this game. So it's tricky, and it's a lot of things you got to balance, honestly.
So is it just because you're an American going overseas, or is it what do you think it is?
I just think, I mean, because you have to think these kids, I mean, the whatever, the locals there, I mean, you have to think they get new Americans every year. So they already know what this is about. You know what I mean? So it's like, that's tricky. You have to get in a really good situation where they're open to you and like understand like, okay, this is the team for this year and we're going to make the best out of it. You can get some situations where guys are just like, okay, we know why you're here. Like, you know, and it's just, they can make it a little more difficult for you, you know, just not obviously passing the ball or let's, you know, like when they could probably say, oh, you can go to this restaurant, you probably like this or this grocery store and stuff like that. So they can make it easier on you. Like it's, but some guys don't. And that's what makes it kind of tricky, you know, but I've been blessed enough to at least out of my 7 years playing, I've been on probably five to six really, really good teams or guys who are like super helpful. So I've been blessed in that department for sure.
Awesome. Awesome. Do you think that's kind of, what's different between overseas and in America, that is it hard to build like a fanship without being able to have a team for more than a couple of years? I talked to Brian Qualby about how, you know, when he was playing in, I think he said Russia, that it was like, you know, a couple months you could lose your job and be out just because they just don't like what you're doing. And the turnover is just so crazy. Is it hard to build like fans there with the turnover being so hard? You know,
not to interrupt you, but only because they just love the game. You know what I mean? Like they just love the peer basketball. They're not even like looking at it. Like I mean, they might have like a favorite player that season or something like that, but they're not in, like they're invested in the club and just the game of basketball. They just love the game so much. I feel like here it's more like people kind of get to like the players kind of more in the NBA. You know, like you want to, it's a player. Like in Europe, it's more the club. So it's more team. They're going to ride with the team no matter who's on the team. You know what I mean? So it's not hard. Obviously, it's way easier if you're winning, you know what I mean? And your club's been good, but for the most part, it's fine.
Nice, nice. Well, it almost, to me, like while you're talking, it almost feels like the vibe that college has. Cause like I'm a huge college basketball fan, huge Grizz fan. Yeah. I'm also a huge Michigan State fan. And so like, I don't care who's on the team. Like I just love that team. Exactly. So it almost feels that kind of like that kind of vibe.
No, that's exactly what it is. Like they're just invested in the club and in the game. So it's not hard if you've been a decent club or a really good club. No, they're gonna show up and show out every single time.
That's awesome. Yeah. What are your favorite places that you've been to?
My favorite place probably has to be Israel by far, only because it was, the weather was good. It reminded me, I'm from Los Angeles, California, Venice, California. So I'm right there by the beach. I grew up right by the beach, 7 minutes away. So Israel, I mean, there was like a beach in every city. So it was like the weather was good. So that was probably for sure by far the best city to like live in and just be in good weather. Austria was probably my favorite team. We won 2 championships back to back. And that was the only time I probably felt like back in college where like these guys, everybody cares for everybody. Everybody's trying to, everybody has the same goal. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So that, definitely. Yeah,
from the team standpoint was the best, my favorite.
That's awesome. Yeah. I have never been across the pond, as they say, but, and I've also never been to California, but I've been to all, you know, across the nation, but that's where I want to go. I want to take my kids to the California to go to the ocean there. I've been to New York and Florida and Texas, but never made it to California.
Yeah, you got to get there once all this craziness ends. Maybe next summer, definitely got to get in there. They'll love it for sure.
Yeah, definitely. So you've been keeping busy with basketball. What are your plans, you know, after basketball? Do you have, you know, a set amount of years that you're going to still be playing or?
Yeah, I want to play as long as I can play. I mean, like, long as I'm healthy and the money's right, I want to for sure do that. But obviously, if things don't, like, if I can't make that next jump in the next two to three years, I obviously have to start looking into getting to my next chapter in my life. And that probably will be some sort of coaching or some personal training with basketball. It definitely would be a basketball. Basketball because it just comes easy to me, like just mind wise, not even just like physically. Mind, I obviously love it. I live pretty much like dedicated my whole life to it, but I also enjoy it. Like I can be in a gym from 8 to 9 and not be like tired of it. So
yeah,
that's probably, I mean, I obviously want to enjoy my work. So that's probably for sure what I'm going to do when I'm done.
That's awesome. And so you mentioned levels, like, for me also, and also my listeners, like, what do you mean by levels? I'm sure there's levels into the overseas of basketball. Like, can you explain that a little bit more?
Yeah. So, okay. So obviously they have different leagues. So EuroLeague is probably the NBA of Europe, right? And then they have a thing called Champions League, and then, like FIBA Cup. All these things are like, these are all like the top leagues, and you get the best teams from each league. So you're playing against pretty much the best players in Europe. And then once you get out of those other leagues, so you got EuroLeague, FIBA Cup, Champions League, FIBA Cup, all those things. Once you get done from that, you just have your regular league in each country. That's just a domestic league. So depending on that, and that still can be really, really good. Like Russia, for example, like that's a, I mean, they play in all those top leagues, and their domestic league, who they have to play everybody in Russia, the basketball is so high. So they're just, that's just a different. So that level is like, let's say that level is 10, and let's say Austria that I've played in is maybe like a 5 or something. Like, you know what I mean? So every country is different. So like a Poland would be, let's say, a 7 or something like that. So each league is a different number, and it depends on just the locals of the basketball. Like obviously in Russia, the Russians are better at basketball than Austrians, or like Israeli league is really, really good, and they're better, their Israelis are better than, I don't know, Albanians, like, I don't, you know what I mean? So it's just that's the level of it, because all the Americans are pretty good. I mean, you know, like Americans are Americans, like,
yeah,
they're taking the best guys, but that's what pretty much sums up the league. So that's pretty much the levels. And obviously those levels obviously equal payouts, and those payouts are just as big of a difference. You know what I mean? From
In
this aspect.
Okay. Where are some places that you'd like to go?
I mean, literally just play. Like, I don't really have a preference. I'm at a point right now, my next contract, I want to get somewhere where it's a good stepping stone, like have a good season where some of the leagues I played in, they're like, I could be decent, and then they could say, oh, the league maybe not as good as like a team in another team in like Greece or Russia they would want. So they want high level players, but you also have to play in like those good levels to show, you know what I mean? Cause like 20 points in Russia is different than 20 points in Austria, or 20 points in Israel is different from 20 points in like Romania or something like that, you know? Mm-hmm. So like, that's where I want to go, somewhere I can go where I can perform and they like, they respect it, and they get what I can do, and just keep taking steps forward pretty much.
That's awesome. So when you were coming into your playing for the Grizz, who were you being recruited out of high school?
So I committed like I verbaled pretty, like it was pretty much coming down there. I mean, the University of Detroit was coming hard. It pretty much came down to University of Portland or Montana. But I verbal before my story from this whole Montana thing is, so I played on my last year, I played on Compton Magic's Adidas team. Really, like one of the, probably the best, it is one of the, like top two AU teams like in the history of AU period. And on that team I was playing with 3 unsigned players that are in the top 100. So I was playing with Allen Crabbe, Richard Solomon, and Bryce Jones. And I was on that team, so we were playing against 250, 300 coaches every game, right? And I was playing pretty well. Like I probably played the best out of everybody. Like just stats wise, just playing the best. And it was funny that playing against all those coaches, I only got like 3 calls from that. So I was like, Montana called to even see like if it was even like, do we have a chance? St. Mary's called and said like, is this real? Like, does he really do this? And then it was one other school. I want to say Detroit was just interested. So okay. Then I was just kind of – I got bitter kind of, honestly. Like, because I was just like, there's nothing else I can do. You know what I mean? Like, I'm playing really good against all these – like, in front of all these coaches. Like, this is what you play good, and you should get that interest. So I never even heard of Montana, honestly. Like, I didn't even know it was on the map. Like, so I just, like, I went on my visit, and I enjoyed it. Like, Will was there. I went on my visit. Will was there at CPQ, and I enjoyed it. I had a really good time. I played really well. And I was ready to commit right there. But the people that obviously the people that helped me make my decision was like, because they kind of knew what the senior season I was going to have. So they were like, you should just wait. And I was just kind of like fed up and like bitter. So I did kind of wait. And I was on a really good team at that high school team. We were like top five in the country going into my senior year. So we were going to be pretty, like, we had ESPN games. Like, so I would be out there and to be seen. And it didn't matter to me. Like, I was just, like, so mad. So I just verbaled in the beginning. And once I verbaled, I had the senior season that I was supposed to have. And then there was other schools, like, big schools started to come talk. But they wanted me to, like, decommit. They wanted me to de-verbal. And so they can even talk to me. And I was just like, no, like, I'm fine. Like, I'm happy where I'm going. So that's kind of how the whole Montana thing came about, and I was pretty happy with how it went at Montana, so I can't complain.
Nice. Yeah, I've never been recruited by anything or for anyone, so that kind of part of basketball kind of fascinates me. How is it being, you know, 18, 19, 17 year old, maybe even 16 when you first get calls? How is that? What is that like to be recruited, and how hard is it to kind of sift through the BS and what is real?
Oh man, it's literally. I mean, it literally depends on your parents and your circle that you have. Honestly, from that standpoint, to answer that part of it, of just like sifting through the bullshit. Honestly,
yeah.
Like, where people like listen out there, you don't want to like go anywhere. Even if you know you're going to start and you're a really high level player, if they're telling you you're going to start, then that's probably not the best like sign, because they shouldn't have to tell you that. You know, they should just come in and say you should work for it. Even if you know you're going to start and do everything, like you still want college coaches to push you and not give you anything. Because once you step on campus, whatever they told you in that phone call to get you there changes. You see a whole different guy. You know what I mean? So from that standpoint, that's hard, and you just gotta have pretty much a good circle and good parents. But being recruited is actually like kind of, it's funny because at that age, I don't know how kids are now, but I'm pretty like usually all my peers and people a little older than me, like you don't really want to talk to a coach on the phone. Like you don't really want to do that. Like the most you're doing is you obviously only want to talk to a girl on the phone. You're not want to sit here and talk. So that was always just kind of like, okay, like, I hear you. So that was like, you know, after the first call, two calls, you don't, because they want to do their due diligence. So they want to call once a week, twice a week. You know what I mean? They just want to let you know how much they care. So that part gets a little, it dries out. But I think the most exciting part for everybody is just the letters. When you first start getting letters, like, that they're interested and they send you stuff about the school, I think everybody enjoys that. That's like that moment you realize like, oh, like I can play college basketball. So I think that's like the most funnest things, is just seeing all the letters you have and like what schools are interested. So I think from that point, that was probably the most rewarding. I think a lot of people would say that, because it's just now you're finally realizing like I can be a college basketball player. So yeah.
Yeah. So you mentioned you're kind of frustrated with the recruiting. Did you kind of take that and have a chip on your shoulder when you came to Montana?
110%. Like I took that into my senior season as even coming in as like my last season in high school, just because I was like, there's no other better situation or better team I could be on. Like there's nothing else I could probably do besides that I could do, like for me physically. Like, yes, obviously if I could jump out the gym, I probably would have went to one of the like best schools, you know, and the thing, but that was the thing that they probably were not like that shying away from, is me being athletic enough. So I didn't even I definitely took that chip. I mean, I like still hold like chips like that. You know I mean, because that lets you know that you have to have a chip when you play against in front of 300 coaches, and they're really much saying like, I'm not interested, and that's your best. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you only have no choice but to hold that chip. So yeah, for sure.
So you chose University of Montana. You know what? You talked about your trip to Montana and seeing that it was actually real, and you knew where it was.
Yeah.
What made you choose University of Montana?
The guys. I mean, the team, pretty much the guys. Honestly, they came in. They didn't like. I mean, I'm pretty sure other guys have other like experiences with this. Like, you go on a visit. Some guys don't want to pass you the ball. They don't want the guy to come in and show what he can do. Or you know, guys are just gonna be, you know, different guys. Like, you know, you're coming in to take somebody's spot regardless, you know what I mean? Depending on how many seniors or blah blah blah. But no, I came in, everybody was super like just super cool, just super like chill, and they obviously I ended up playing with Will on the team. So obviously him, which was funny because when I found out that he was my host, it was funny because we just ended up beating them last year in the state championship. So that was yeah. So he wasn't, I'm pretty sure he, at first, he wasn't too happy about having to do that, but playing with him, that kind of solidified it. Cause I could see myself playing with him for the next 4 years, you know, like his intensity, his on the ball defense, like kind of playing the same way, like my high school played, like fast and just with a lot of passion. So like that kind of made me be like, okay, like I can play with this guy, like that'll be fun. And then Anthony Johnson, who was there, he wasn't on, like he wasn't playing in any like pickup game, like he didn't play in any like pickup games or wasn't even really around, but he came out and took some time to sit down and talk to me, and he pretty much said like, if you don't think this is the best situation for you, like don't come, like, I mean, you got to make the best situation for you. And that like really opened my eyes, because that was a real thing. He could easily came, and obviously me seeing what he did this year, like obviously if he tells me anything, I'm probably gonna take it, you know, like he just just destroyed Weber State in this guy championship. So I was like oh my god, you know what I mean? But he was like super honest and genuine with me, so that was like huge. When he said that, I was like, okay, like, yeah, this is probably for sure the best place for me.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Did you give Will a hard time about beating his team?
100%. Once obviously we got comfortable enough.
You know, yeah, you don't want to say that the first thing.
Yeah, you don't, exactly. But it's funny because he has one. I have like that, but he also has one more Big Sky championship than me. So it's kind of like, that kind of like, you know, it evens itself out, you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. That's awesome. So do you have a favorite memory or a moment during your career at the University of Montana?
Ooh, favorite memory or moment.
Probably a lot of moments.
Yeah, I would have to say that first championship. That first championship was huge because we lost that in the year before, my freshman year, which I think we for sure got cheated. Like, that was – they made some kind of calls that should have definitely went our way. That was easy calls. So – and we wanted to win for BQ so bad. Like, it was like – he's such a nice guy, one of my favorite teammates, one of my favorite humans on earth. And so when we lost and we couldn't win it for him, it was like – that literally just motivated everybody that next year coming back. Because I think he was our lone senior, I'm pretty sure. So everybody was super motivated. Everybody was hungry. Everybody worked hard. So, and then just to like put all that work in and then come back. And obviously I had some family stuff going on. So it was like, took all that stuff and just put it into one. And then at the end, when you win it, especially how we won it. And like, I ended up like playing really good in the championship game. It was just a crazy moment with a lot of emotion. So that probably for sure would have to be my favorite moment for sure.
Awesome. That you mentioned Brian, is that year, was that the one you guys lost to Eastern Washington in overtime and then lost to Northern Colorado?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. He mentioned that Eastern Washington game that he's like, I'm not to, you know, complain against the refs, but that game, he's like, there is something about the refs that was not right, and we lost that game, and there's no way that we should have lost that game.
No, 100%. I mean, they. I mean, it's kind of funny. Like, every, like when you look back on it, you can tell. And while you're playing, you can tell. Like, oh, like they don't really want us to win. Like for whatever reason, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. And they, but they didn't. And even in the championship game, it was rough. Like there was some calls that we made big plays, and at the end to like shift it to our way, and they didn't, like the calls didn't go our way, which they should have. And that was just obvious. Like it's like, sheesh, like we can't catch a break. So we were definitely motivated for that next year.
So what were you, expecting anything coming into your first year at University of Montana? What were you expecting?
Yeah, I was expecting to just come in and start, and any freshman come in and start, score 20 points. You know what I mean? Like you don't, you come in thinking you're hot stuff for sure, and then you get like, you get in there, and then you have to face somebody, Art Stewart, who's got probably 15 pounds on you, and physical as I don't know what, and you got to go against him every day. And then now I'm calling back home to my friends, like, ooh, like this is different. I thought this was going to be a lot easier. So definitely you get a rude awakening right away. But no, yeah, you just come in and thinking that you're the guy, and you definitely get humbled real quick. But it was good going against Art every day. I think that for sure shaped me and helped my career for sure.
Do you think there is a difference coming in from high school basketball and then playing, you know, college basketball in at the Big Sky Conference?
110%. I mean, college basketball is a little different now because they took away like hand checking and stuff, like not as physical. But when I came in, like if you weren't like fouling, you weren't playing defense.
Yeah.
Like it was crazy. Like, you know what I mean? It was crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Like when you're playing against like literally men that have been in college like for years and that, you know, have beards and like, like going against real guys. So, yeah, I think back then, I don't know about now. I don't know how when I watch it, it doesn't seem as physical, obviously just because of games involving. But from a skill thing, yeah, for sure. I mean, guys are faster, guys are stronger. The coaches want more from you. You got, like, you know, it's just, I mean, you got to do school, everything that all like adds on the basketball part. But for sure, when I was coming in, the most thing I had to like adjust to was how physical it was.
Yeah. Yeah, I always remember, like, and I dislike this team just because they're always good, Duke. I always remember Duke teams, like Shane Battier. Like, that guy, like, I'm sure he has, like, probably two degrees, a doctorate. Like, how long was that guy there? Like, it seems like forever.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Shane was a tough competitor.
Yeah.
Whole basketball career.
What does it mean to make the postseason? I believe you made it all 4 years. I think you had three NCAA tournaments, and I believe you went to one CBI.
Yeah, my senior year, we didn't make a postseason.
Oh, okay. Maybe I just.
So my freshman year, we went CBI. Obviously, sophomore year, NCAA tournament, junior year, NCAA tournament, and then my senior year, we didn't play in the postseason.
Oh, okay. So I must have added one on there.
Yeah. But, no, I mean, that's why you play basketball. Like, I've won. Like, I came from a school when we won, like, two back-to-back state championships, two back-to-back city championships. So, like, that's what I play for. I only know how to play winning basketball. That's what I play for. So, doing that and, like, once I got to college and then being able to get to the postseason and win a couple championships again – it was everything. I mean, I don't even know how to play like that. So it's just a different feeling. It's a different, like, obviously it's bragging rights. This is a different feeling. Winning that Big Sky Championship is no other feeling. I mean, because it's like, obviously you got to win the tournament. You got to win like three games or two games back then. And just that pressure of winning the games and then winning it at home, it's just amazing. Like, you can't really explain the feeling.
So what is it like to play in an NCAA tournament game? Like, that's like one of my favorite things in the whole world is the NCAA tournament. What is it like?
It's like, man, it's kind of like, I'm trying to find a word for it. Cause it's like, we always like, it was so different. I mean, the arenas are so much bigger. You know what I mean? It's like you're playing like literally on a stage. Like, like you know what I mean? Like all the lights are on. It's just a different feeling. Like you're like, it's like you're literally performing for people. Like, so that was the biggest thing I always took from, like, that was it. Like, it was just, everything was just, you know, you got to do the media timeouts, you know, you get all, they give you all this stuff, you get the nice locker room. And it was just, everything's just an upper, like a next level from what we're used to. Obviously the teams, like the team, I mean, the guards are guards, like guards are guards, but the difference between, I feel like, Big Sky and like playing those teams, other teams that are big guys, like those other guys are just so much like bigger and like stronger than usually you guys like have on your team. Like in Big Sky, like the four could be like 6'5" or 6'6", you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're four, in those big schools are like 6'8", you know what I mean? 6'9". So that's the thing that's kind of like a little different, more physical on that level.
So I've always wondered this, you know, they give you like that timeout in the NCAA tournament. How hard is that to, you know, the TV timeout? How hard is that to play in a game and have those TV timeouts? Does it kind of affect the flow and the nature of the game?
It definitely affects the nature of it. I wouldn't say the flow. It depends on obviously what team like you are. Like obviously if you were team that feed off, like, I mean, obviously teams, all teams feed off momentum, but some teams literally play off momentum and like runs and stuff like that. So if you're that type of team, then yes, it's going to affect the game, but it's more the nature, like you'll play for 2-3 minutes and then you get like a 2-minute timeout. Like you get so much rest. It's kind of like mind boggling. You're sitting on the bench like, all right, like I'm ready to get back out there. So I guess from that part, it's kind of like, like, oh wow, like this is, we don't need this many timeouts, you know, like you want to just keep playing.
Yeah,
so I guess it's good. I mean, from that standpoint, so I think it for sure changes the nature of it. It slows the game down for sure.
So of the two NCAA tournament games you played in, I know you lost both of those games, but do you have a favorite game that you played in?
Obviously Wisconsin, because the game was way closer. You know what I mean? I mean, Syracuse was just too big for us. Like we came out and I remember the first three baskets were and one dunks, and I remember being on the free throw line like, yeah, this is gonna be a long game. Like, that was the first time I ever, and my only time I've ever, like, when a game have started, I was like, yeah, we don't have a chance. Like it's,
yeah.
Like, I mean, they were just so much bigger than us. There's nothing we could do. Like, and they're obviously in that zone. If you're not hitting shots in that zone, and they just swallow you up. And we obviously weren't hitting shots. So, yeah. So, obviously, Wisconsin, yes, Wisconsin was a way better game because at least we were in the game and it was a solid game. So, for sure, Wisconsin.
So, you were like the Swiss Army knife for the Grizz. You know, you're in the top, I believe top 5 in scoring, top 10 in rebound and assists as well. Has that hit you in your, you know, now that you're done with your career with the Grizz, has that hit you yet?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, now, cause social media is so like different now, you know what I mean? Like when we were in college, like social media wasn't like so crazy. So it's like when I got to 1,000 points, I didn't know how like big it was until I got there. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't plastered everywhere. So I didn't even know. Like obviously I saw Will get to 1,000. That was the person that I was like closest to that got to 1,000. And that was like it was a big deal, but it wasn't like a big deal how it is now. Like if you get 1,000, it's plastered everywhere.
Yeah.
So I look from that standpoint, now I just look at it like now it's such a big deal because people like they talk about it so much. Like I didn't even know. I never played for, like, yes, I wanted to score because I wanted to be a guy on the team, but I never was like trying to be a scorer. Like I never was a scorer. I never was going out there trying to get like baskets until probably my senior year when I like averaged that. But my first like 3 years, I weren't like, I was just a role guy trying to win games. Like, if I probably knew that if 1,000 would, like, if the scoring thing was such a big deal, I probably would have shot a couple more shots again. Like, honestly, you know what I mean? Like, I wasn't, yeah. I kind of just lucked up on my 16,000 or whatever points I have, like, 1,600 points, because I just was just, it just, that's kind of how my just career went. But I definitely wasn't looking for stats or looking to do anything like that.
1,673.
You're close.
So,
yeah, I don't even remember. The only thing that with that is I should have for sure rebounded more because I think I'm 11th, I think, in rebounding. I should have cracked top 10. I was too lazy, too much bargaining. Yeah.
I thought you were top 10. I might have not had the right numbers, but I believe you. I thought you were top 10. All maybe right. Maybe somebody else got you.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
if you could only freeze those and not have anyone like, you know, lower you and stuff like that, that's do you ever watch that? Like where you're like, oh man.
No, see how funny that is. So it's about the people around you, honestly. So this year when Saeed passed me this year, right? Those people around me, they were just like, oh, they're gonna pass. Like so, like they were like kind of like little mad. Like they obviously want me to be where I'm at when I was fourth. And I didn't even care until they just kept bringing it up and bringing it up. And then it kind of got a little competitive. Like obviously you want to be there, but I never really cared too much because I didn't try to score. Like if I tried to score, I would have been way higher. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I didn't care from that standpoint. But obviously when your friends and family are like, oh, like you're about to get past, like then obviously the competitive juices come in. But other than that, no, not at all. I don't really think about it too much.
So, you were ultimate consistency on, you know, even coming in as a freshman, you know, I believe you were averaging 8 or 9 points a game. And then your sophomore year, you're averaging around 12. And then junior year, about 14. And then your senior year, you went up to, I believe, like 18 or 19 points a game. What was that? You know, was it your last season where you kind of were like, hey, I got to make this next step? Or what kind of kicked it in gear for you to kind of reach another level?
No, honestly, it was just the team that I was on. Like, I could always do what I could do, but it's like, it wasn't like I said before, like I always was played winning basketball. So if I'm not needed to score, I'm probably not going to look to score. That's just probably my nature. So it's like, I'll probably look to pass first, but going into my senior year, knowing the type of team we had, obviously me coming off winning the best guy player of the year, I wanted to definitely submit I wanted to prove that I earned that award, even though I probably wasn't the highest scoring guy. I wanted to prove I can score these. Like I can score, you know what I mean? I don't have to. Like if I'm playing with a BQ or I'm with Derek and Matthias and Art Stewart and all these guys, I'm not gonna go out here and just keep looking for my shot when I know the ball is just gonna come to me and we're gonna play in flow. And that's just pretty much how I was taught to play. So that's how that worked. I mean, I didn't – like, if you look at my shot attempts from my sophomore to junior, I took maybe one or two shots, even more. Like, I didn't – it was nothing that changed. It was just – whatever role the team needed, that's what I felt like I should do, and because I just wanted to win at the end of the day.
Do you think that's what's different about, when you played to, this next generation where it's more just like about what they want, less than about the team?
Yeah, 100%. And that just comes from coaching, though. I mean, honestly, it's not, they don't know. If coaches allow that, then they just do what the coaches allow. Like, I was blessed enough that my first real organized basketball coach, John Fisher, he literally taught us how to, me and my people that I played with when I was young, we had to play the game the right way or it was like hell. You know what I mean? Like he was screaming down our throat. Like if somebody's open, you pass the ball. It's literally, there's no other option. Like, you know, whether you know that person's going to miss or not, like he's open, pass the ball. Right. So that's how literally I grew up playing at 8 or 9 years old. So it's like, by the time I get to high school or college, this is how I play. And I just think it's more on the coaches than the players, because the players are going to follow the coaches. So it's on the coaches, and hopefully they push these kids to do that. But 100%, I think these kids, and that's the reason why you get all these transfers and stuff like that, because you get to college, and now college coaches, you have to play the right way. Like, everybody is open. Everybody can score here, so everybody has to play the right way, and that's when you see, and these guys or these kids are shell-shocked, and it's not their fault. Like, it's literally not their – like, if I grew up only knowing how to score, and then all of a sudden I get somewhere, and I'm like, oh, you're telling me not I can't shoot the ball every time? Like, I don't – what am I going to do? I'm going to be lost. So I think that's for sure what it is, 100%. So I think it's real onus on the coaches to get these kids to know that there's only one way to play, and that's to play the right way. You know what I mean? Like, how the Warriors pass the ball, move the ball. That makes everybody else want to play hard on defense, and everybody's happy, and then I feel like that's just how the game should be played.
Yeah, and you brought up the Golden State, you know, that their teams, it was so smooth basketball too. You know, they all shared the ball, and it was just nice to see.
Yeah, this is, I mean, everybody's happy, everybody's fun. It's a fun game. Everybody wants to play defense. Like, it's just literally, it's a different game when like people do that. You know what I mean? It's just, you can't
Yeah.
even explain it.
So what was it like to play for Coach Tinkle?
It was fun. It was fun. He's super motivated. Like, I mean, he was. I mean, we saw him every day. Like, we were with him in the trenches every day. So just his personality, his like competitiveness was probably the most thing that I loved about him. Like, because he, if it was up to him, he'll still be out there playing. You know what I mean? So he like, and he carries that, and he lets you know that. So every day in practice, it was good to just be him making sure he brought it every day and like motivating us. And I think the biggest thing he did for my teams that I were on, that he always said, we're playing for the like the just the name on the front of our chest, not the back. You know what I mean? Like, he really put that in our thing, that we were playing for the state of Montana. Like, I really believe that. You know what I mean? Like, our he ingrained that in us, and like, we were playing for the people before us and stuff like that. So I think that was huge, and it was amazing. Like I said, super funny guy, great personality, but that was the biggest thing I enjoy more. That obviously he played there, so he has obviously a lot of pride for Montana, but he made sure that we played with the same pride.
So what was it like playing for, you know, University of Montana and that culture of basketball there?
I loved it. I mean, when they finally, I mean, only thing that I would have, I don't even want to say it's a negative thing, but the only thing I wish more is that they wouldn't wait till we went like 12-0, 13-0 in conference till they started packing out the Dahlberg. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
they, for some odd reason, we kind of always had to prove that we were like, it was going to be a good team. You know what I mean? I felt like I wish that they would have came a little bit earlier, but when they came in, it was rocking. I enjoyed it. Literally, those were all my best games. Probably when we had 5,000, 4,000, even 3,000. We had 3,000 in there. It felt like it was, you know, five. So I, when Dahlberg got rocking, there's literally no place like it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So I don't know if you're aware that, you know, the NCAA is looking at allowing student athletes to have a transfer free, like where they can transfer one time at any time that they want. Do
That's
you
insane.
agree with that?
I just okay, from I have two like only I have like two things on it.
Yeah.
I agree with it from a standpoint of, if a kid like wants to leave and pick another school, like why not? Like, why is this such like a, it shouldn't be that big of a deal, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But on the other side of it is like, some kids, if they just stick it out, it like literally is the greatest. Like, it could be like one of the greatest things for you. You know what I mean? A lot of kids with that rule, then now you're saying, oh, okay, if I come in and I don't, the coach is telling me I can't shoot the ball enough, then I'm just gonna go to another school, right? And then most likely you're gonna go somewhere else where that like, coach is gonna be the same way. You know what I mean? So then it's kind of like you letting these kids kind of run away from adversity a little bit. So I'm kind of like stuck in between. I think kids for sure should like fight it out, because your freshman year is the biggest jump from coming to high school to freshman. So most
Yeah.
kids don't really have that. Like, it's gonna be an adjustment. You know what I mean? So
Oh, yeah.
I just think from that standpoint, letting kids kind of do that. But in the other standpoint, I do think, I mean, if a kid wants to leave, like, I don't think people, like, kids should have to like sit out. But you know what I mean? I just don't.
Yeah.
Picture.
Yeah.
So I'm just kind of stuck in the
I
middle.
totally agree with you. I feel like if a coach can leave and not have to sit out a season,
No, exactly.
why should the player, you know?
100%.
And also, I totally agree with you. Like, you want to fight through the adversity because, like you said, fighting through adversity and accomplishing something, not even if it's like a championship, but just accomplishing something little that you fought through
Yes.
with your guys. And I think that's way more memorable than like winning a championship, I think, because you just have those memories.
Yeah, 100%. And you have, I mean, I was blessed. I mean, I know there was for sure times as a freshman, I'm like, yes, I want to transfer. Like, this is BS. Like, I want to transfer. And probably if I didn't have to sit out a year, I probably would have transferred, just because it's just like, if one thing doesn't go your way, you want to just leave. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're just,
oh, yeah.
Like, young kid, just think you know everything. So that's why I think, like, for that, like I said, that's why I think it's both. But yeah, I wouldn't have, like, I still talk to most of my teammates now, and these are lifelong friends that I have because I stuck through something, you know, that, like, I should have, like, went through a little adversity and got over it, and now I have, like, long lost, like, I have lifelong friends that guys that's going to be best man at my wedding and stuff like that, so it's definitely huge.
Yeah. So, when you came from California to Montana, was it a culture shock?
It was a culture shock from the standpoint of people were so nice in Montana.
Okay.
But two things I say. So people were so nice. Like, the first time somebody held the door for me, I was like, oh, really? Like, this is what, you know what I mean? Like, now, okay. Like, now I know I got, like, I learned how to hold the door for people because of, like, Montana, honestly. Like, where I'm from, like, that's not a thing. Like, you don't just hold it up. Like, everybody's in their own world. Everybody's, like, you know, just get their own thing. In Montana, everybody, like, you cannot know this person. They'll ask you how your day is, and you ask them how your day. You have a little quick little 30-second little exchange. But, you know, like, me experiencing that matters, you know what I mean? Like, that alone can, like, brighten somebody's day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, from that standpoint, yes, that was a culture shock. And for sure, that one day when I walked out of Dahlberg in the winter and snow went up to my knees, I definitely was like, really, I was like, oh, like, did I make the right decision? I'm not sure what's going on here.
Yeah, that's not sand on my legs. That's snow.
Exactly. Like, exactly. I actually have to just try to stay on my feet and not slip on this dark black ice on the way to the dorm.
So did you have did you ever experience like your first snowball fight in Montana?
So actually, which was when the first time I was in snow actually was in, we went in my senior year of high school, we went to a tournament in Portland, and Portland was snowing, and my team had a snowball fight there. So that was actually my first one.
Nice.
Me, like, my guys who I came in with, Mike Weisner, Billy Reeder, Levon, we definitely had a couple of snowball fights coming from practice to practice, you know, stuff like that as a freshman for sure.
Nice, nice. So who was the best athlete you played with or played against?
Best athlete, I would have to say it has to be out of, obviously, Will. In college, that's either Will in college or Dwayne Poley, who I played with in high school.
Okay.
From the standpoint, Dwayne probably had a 40-inch vert, probably.
Holy cow. Wow.
Like, he could easily jump. He could jump in front of the free throw line in high school.
Wow.
But Will, on the standpoint, it's like, he was so fast, and he could still jump. He was so fast, so quick, and could jump. So, like, he was more complete. So I don't know. It depends on what you like as an athlete. But, yeah, those two guys, I would have to say, I don't know what in department, what I would say who was a better athlete. But those two guys for sure.
Man, yeah, I wish I had a vertical. It just amazes me. Like, I probably have like a 4-inch vertical probably. Yeah, I'm the ultimate quintessential white guy.
I'm not right above you. I'm probably a 15. It's not that. You know, if I could jump like 4 more inches, 5 more inches, I would be in a different place right now.
Yeah, but you're probably what, like 6'7", 6'8"?
No, 6'4".
6'4", okay. Yeah. Yeah, I'm like 5 foot, like 10.
Yeah.
My highlight is if I touch the rim when I jump. Like, yeah, oh yeah.
As long as you get up there.
Yeah, pull a hamstring while I do it, and yeah.
That's the thing. It's not probably not about jumping. It's about the landing. Is when you get older, right?
Yeah, yeah. Oh man, I am not that old, but man, some of the times I do something and I'm like, wow, what did I do? Jeez.
Yeah.
And when you get older, it's just like crazy.
The most normal movements, right?
No, oh, yeah, yeah. So what are your thoughts on, you know, it's been kind of a crazy year, especially with athletics and our culture. What college players are thinking or hopefully, what are your feelings on college players getting paid?
I think it's only right. I mean, I mean, it's like kind of like a no-brainer. Seriously, I mean, they make too much. Like, it's a billion-dollar business, and you're saying like you're like telling kids to be happy that they should go to like get an education. But my scholarship is only 1 year now, so it's like I've been on multiple teams where the kids could have 4.0s or 3.8s or whatever and not be on the team. So this is not about school. Like, that's, I want to make that very clear. Anybody listening, like, this is not about school, because if I can have a 4.0, but if I can't play basketball, like, I'm getting sent home. You know what I mean? Like, so this is for sure about basketball. Like, you know what I mean? This is about whatever sport you're playing in, because scholarships are year to year. So from that standpoint, I mean, that's pretty business-like to me. So I don't see why we, like, players, they should get paid. I think it's pretty clear cut.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. I'm not one for the NCAA. If anyone knows me, I'm very adamant about how the NCAA, you know, they say they're for the player, but they're highly unlike anybody else, where they make, you know, roughly annually $1.2 billion a year. You know, I think they make, after they pay all the conferences and the tournaments, they have about a $300 to $400 million revenue for a nonprofit. That's pretty good, you know.
Yeah, exactly. exactly.
So, but my only like a devil's advocate is knowing you know the teams that you were on. I totally think that they should be let players make money from their names or from their likeness.
Yeah.
Let's say, you know, a player that's not as good or doesn't get the name recognition, and then, you know, there's somebody like you that gets a lot more publicity and more of the money. Could that cause kind of strife in the locker room?
I think if they was to do that, I mean, it would 100%.
Yeah.
I mean, like, just kids. I mean, kids. Yeah. Any, like, it's money changes anything, any situation, right? If you money changes people, but I think if you do it from the standpoint, it's like you pay everybody the same amount of money, but let's just say like if they're selling a jersey, like if they're selling my jersey, then I think that little extra money could come from that, or they're doing this or that. I think that would be kind of fair. You know, I think people should get the same amount, but then if like they're making, like if I'm, like they got me on a billboard here or they got my face plastered places, then I think that's easy for like you to sit like in a locker room and say, yeah, well, my face on here. Like, if your face gets on there, then hey, like they should pay you the same amount. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I think from that standpoint, I think that's the way you could probably kind of do it. Just whatever. Like, if they're using your likeness more than the next kid, then I think you get extra money. But I think for sure every kid should probably just get the same, because we're all on the same. You know what I mean? We're on the same team.
Yeah.
Doing the same thing. So.
And I always thought like you could give this like a higher stipend, and that's one way they could do it. And then also for like the, if you're not wanting to give that money out, like one thing that I thought would be a good idea was to put that money that maybe that player made from his likeness into some type of a growth or some type of a fund.
Yeah,
where when upon graduation or upon leaving, they can say, better.
Because
then you're not getting that money, like, and you're not having to, you know, flaunt it around, and not like the players would, but it's not going to be out there.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's actually a better thing, because then you don't have to worry about actually like the players getting into it about, oh, you make a little money, more money here and stuff like that.
Yeah. And I would for sure have to, it would have to be invested somehow where the, and I'm not saying schools would, but I would want it privately invested where the school has nothing to do with it, so that there's not any kind of, you know, what did you put the full amount in there, or are you jipping me some, you jipping me some pennies here and there, or but
100%. No, that's a great idea. Like, that's definitely what they should do. And you got it, because you never know, man. These guys, like, you could be a head of a college player and you get hurt that senior season. Is that road for you playing professionally is so long. So some guys don't even make it back from that. So having that little bit of money to, like, have when you get out to do something, and, you know, and obviously kids are coming from different backgrounds, right? So you come in, like, you have to go back home once you're out of college. You have to go back home. You're not getting that Pell money. If you're getting Pell money, if you are less fortunate than the next guy, not getting that scholarship money. Like, now you're going back to being poor again before you were in college. Like, I say I was, like, the richest I ever was in college. Like, I seen the most money because I could get a Pell grant and stuff with my scholarship check. So I had, like, more money than I ever had. But it's like, okay, once that runs out and after my senior season, like, I'm right back to where I was 4 years ago. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
I think it would be amazing if kids could have that money when they're done, just as, like, this is what I did. And obviously schools made money. So I think it works for both parties, I think.
Well, and even, like, you know, like basketball, it's still a contact sport and still, you know, there are injuries. And, you know, somebody can blow out a knee and catastrophically, you know, end their career. But also with, like, football, like, there are guys, I forgot what the guy's name was, and he played for Rutgers, but, like, basically quadriplegic, you know, wow. his life is done. Like, yeah. I think that the NCAA should give its, you know, student athletes, I call it workers, healthcare. Like, if they're putting themselves out there,
100%.
The one thing you should do is offer healthcare, where they're not sacrificing their knees or their livelihood, you know, for nothing.
Yeah,
because you know what's going to happen when you get hurt, they're going to cut you, and you're not going to have a scholarship anymore. So,
no, exactly. I mean, that from that. 100%. The thing is, those, and it, healthcare is right, because it's like, even if you do, like, you're gonna, okay, cool, you'll get your surgery paid for through school, you'll get physical therapy through the thing, but if that thing is still, like, aching you, like, the trainers can only do so much. And it's like, I'm not saying this is for every school, but if you're not, like, playing anymore, you get kind of pushed back to the end of the, like, okay, like, we'll get to you when we get to you. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're not like the, now if you're not playing, it's not different. It's like, okay, maybe I was usually the first four on the training table. But, like, if you're not playing and you can't help the team, like, which makes sense, but also kind of harsh too. But now you're probably the 10th, 11th one now getting checked on. So, for sure, that for sure makes sense.
Did you ever have an injury, and I don't know, at the University of Montana or even professionally, did you ever feel like when you had an injury, you've had to, like, play through it so that you could keep either your scholarship or keep, you probably felt it overseas a lot more, keeping your job overseas?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I only, the worst thing I ever did was I, like, fractured, like, my pinky my freshman year. It kind of made me miss some games that probably made me miss, like, being freshman of the year. So that kind of always will stick with me. Like, that kind of made me mad a little bit, but it was just pinky too, so it was just like such a BS, like, I can play through this, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But,
so I had actually a tibial stress fracture after I was done playing, actually. Like, so my shin was just always in pain, and then I finally got it checked, and they were just like, yeah, like, you should have, like, we got to get surgery, like, ASAP. Like,
oh, wow.
So my first year in Cyprus, I got surgery. My recovery time was like 6 to 8 weeks. And I was literally playing on a basketball court, like, playing for my livelihood probably like a month later. So I literally was like 2 months, and then I was like back on. So I slowly have just recovered, like, every year. And, like, this summer, I feel like the best I've ever felt now, even after like 5-6 years. Like, I feel the best.
That's crazy.
At my legs. So, like, yeah. So that's with Cyprus. I just had to play because I already had, because my first year didn't go. So after I got released from Greece, my team in Greece, I didn't play for the rest of the year for whatever, like, my agent just couldn't find me a team, I guess. So when I parted ways with that agent, I got a new one. Like literally, I was starting from like the bottom. So I had to really start all the way back. Like literally, my college career didn't even matter. Like it was just like, all right, like you didn't do anything in Europe, so you're just a this is the player you are. So I literally had to like I couldn't like wait anymore. Because if I would have tried to sit out that season, like 2 years, a year and a half of not playing, I wouldn't be like playing professionally. So that first year, first couple years, yeah, I've been playing through pain. Like so, yeah, from that standpoint, yeah,
Wow.
it's just something you got to do, right? It's not,
Yeah.
you know what I mean? It's not anything that you look at. Like obviously, you can't feel sorry for yourself in that in this business. So you just go out there and do the best you can.
So after your senior year, what was it like? What kind of process did you go through? I'm sure everyone wants to play in the NBA, but what was your thought process and the process that you went through?
The biggest so my thing after my senior year, I was just I ended up leaving school for two like couple months to do some pre-draft training in Sacramento. That was just a that was a journey itself. Like that was super like I was in a hotel with a guy who was just there for a couple months and just pretty much taking off from school. Like I finished a couple I kept doing my school though, like shout out to my school advisor, Grace. She's amazing. She like we had talks and talks, and she convinced me because I was just like, oh, I'll just come back and do it, right? I had a couple classes too. It was a couple classes. She was like, people always say that I never do it, and blah blah blah. So she like stayed on me about just trying to be in as many classes as I can, even though I was away from campus. And those teachers, some most of my teachers ended up working with me. A couple teachers obviously didn't, just which was understandable, but. It was really nice that teachers worked with me, and at least when I was done, I at least only had a couple classes to catch up on. But so I was away from school, I was away from campus for a couple months, and then I came back for graduation, only for graduation, and then I left again. But yeah, that was a journey itself, just being away from school, just working out, just just getting ready pretty much for. What I thought was gonna be the next chapter. I thought me personally, I would have worked out for more teams. Like I only worked out for two teams, so that kind of made me like really, like kind of mad because I was just like, I mean, I'm seeing all these other guys who I had better senior seasons than, and they're like working out for eight, nine teams. You know what I mean? So that kind of made me kind of mad. But I was blessed. I ended up getting I worked out for the Kings, Sacramento Kings, and I worked out for the Lakers, which were. Like that's a dream come true. Like I grew up a Lakers fan, so just working out in that facility was amazing. But so yeah, that was kind of like my journey right after senior season.
Awesome. So you were in Sacramento and kind of just training and stuff.
Yeah. So I was just training through my agent. My agent had a guy he works out like a guy who he sends his like players to his clients to work out with. So at the time, yeah, I was in Sacramento for a couple months.
Awesome. So with everything in our culture going on, I'm a white guy. I've only, been in I've experienced Minnesota, Montana, Wyoming. What does a African American, what type of racism have you seen in your life?
I mean, lots of it, honestly. I mean, it just sucks to say that, but yeah, I mean, I don't, I mean, even before I even, like, a lot of people think racism is like, okay, just only white and black. Like, I'm from a diverse city, like Los Angeles, Venice, and I've experienced racism from Hispanics, you know what I mean? Like, other cultures, like, it's not just the white and black thing. So I kind of grew up with it, you know? Like, if you're walking down the street, like, old lady who doesn't look like you is not the same as you. She might cross the street thinking that, you know, she might feel a little uncomfortable. Like I've grew up like that, so I've kind of been a like pretty. I was kind of built for it. So Montana, I haven't experienced too much of it. Obviously, you might experience a little bit with the. I mean, kids your age when you go to the bar, guys are just dumb and drinking and. Stupid stuff like that, but other than that, I didn't really experience too much in Montana. But yeah, I mean, I've experienced racism for sure.
Yeah. Well, and it's something that I hope that we can get to where things are better for everyone. It's just, it blows my mind that people are like that. So I don't understand it.
I think it comes from just being being aware that racism is a real thing. Like, because people try to act like racism is not a thing. Like, that's insane, right? So if you're not even in it, then how could you ever even change, even if you are? Because some people don't know that they are. You know what I mean? Like, they don't know, you know what I mean? Because they're not knowledgeable, they don't believe that it's real. So, and that, and just doing their homework. I think that even, like, not saying that Montana is like, but, like, if you live in Montana, you probably don't know that this stuff is going on. Like, it's a shock.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They're not educating these people. Like, obviously, it's more like a Native American thing here, but like the next minority. But I think it's a crime that schools like don't like do more with the Black History Month here and just acknowledge like Black history. You know what I mean? Like, Canada that don't even know that these things have went on. You know what I mean? Like, that's insane. Yeah. Like, that's mind boggling. Like, it's a part of American history. Like, people should know.
Well, and I'm a teacher, so that's my profession. So I teach second grade. So we do a lot of stuff down here in Wyoming about Black History Month and go over, you know, Martin Luther King and Ruby Bridges and stuff like that. So, it's crazy. It's crazy.
That's where it starts.
Yeah.
That younger age, just being aware of it, like, this has went on. So they know that this is not, I shouldn't feel this way, or, you know what I mean? It's just like, so, like, it starts from that. Obviously, it starts from the information. It starts from information. And then once you get the information, then being aware of your own feelings and stuff like that. And people calling out other people. Like, it's going to be different if a Black person calls out a white person, or a Black person calls out a Hispanic or whatever other race. It's different when a white person calls out another white person for being racist, or a Black person calls out another Black person. Like, that's where it starts from, is inside the, you know what I mean? Inside the races, you know what I mean?
Inside the ethnic backgrounds and stuff like that. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah. And my son, I talk to him about it sometimes, and I just wish more people had to look through the vision of a child. Yeah. Like, it's like, why? That's a good question. I don't know why. I don't. Well, that's not okay. It's like, yeah, I know it's not okay.
Yeah.
So it's kind of crazy.
No, it's good. I mean, but it's good that, like, you do your, like, due diligence, because then, like, when he gets older or whatever age, like, he's going to pass that on to even his friends, you know? Like, that's not okay. Yeah. Like, but his friend's dad, or even if, you know, if that happens, or to the next person. And that's where it starts, you know what I mean? Obviously, you got to start at home first. So.
Yeah. So what are your... what are you thinking about? You know, you're definitely thinking something with sports, something with coaching, possibly. You know, are you thinking maybe, hey, a future coach of the Grizz?
That would be. I mean, it would take me some time, but like, to see if I really like, if just coaching would be a thing, even college coaching. Like, I like right now, I really like the personal training thing and like doing clinics and stuff. But it seems like the more clinics I do, I feel like I am probably going to get more into coaching. So, obviously, like, I love Montana. I see myself, most likely living in Montana. So, that would be obviously amazing. That would be a great gig. And obviously, Travis is, he's a hell of a mentor that I already have. So, him already doing it and just being able to talk to him in the next couple of years and see what my next steps are would be amazing. It'd be a great transition.
Nice. Do you follow much of the Grizz these days?
Yeah, 100%. Like I said, Travis has been, right when he stepped in, we've been in contact, and he reached out to me, honestly, to make sure I got my degree and wanted me to do that. And he's just been a great mentor since, like, great guy. So it's easy. Obviously, I believe Grizz through and through, but it makes it so much easier that he comes in. I've never played 1 minute. I never scored one basket for him, but he treats me like I've been one of his better players. So it's like, that's super cool, and I super appreciate that's awesome. For that. So, yeah, 100%, I have to keep up with the Grizz.
That's awesome. What do you think of next year, or hopefully hopefully we'll have next year. I've got to have some type of sports going.
Yeah.
What do you think of next year's team?
I think that would be good. I mean, it's always tough because you can't. I mean, it's tough because you have to really base it off opponents. Really, you know what I mean? And it's tough to look at the team and say this and that. Like, I've played on teams, so it's like, yeah, we can think that we're really good or we can think that we're really bad. But then you play out there and other teams might just be as bad as us, or we might not even be that bad, or teams might be better and teams might be worse than us and we actually might be really good. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I thought last year, I mean, I thought that was like Coach Travis did a great job with them. Like, I didn't think they were going to be, I thought middle of the pack maybe.
Yeah.
But they had a hell of a year. You know what I mean? So, like, you just never know until you throw that ball up.
Yeah. I felt like they were just missing that one. Like, in some games, they just had that missing, like, 3-point, like, consistently. I felt like if they could have had a person that, like, consistently hit threes, with Saeed, you know, driving the middle and kicking back out, or even a bigger guy in the middle, like they could have done some damage. So, and I think they probably would have done some damage if they could have went into the Big Sky tournament. And that's what I think. So,
yeah, I was looking forward to seeing what they were gonna do, in that tournament. That was gonna be fun to watch.
Yeah, definitely. Have you ever felt like that, or had some type of a season canceled like that going into, you know, some of these players' senior seasons?
Yeah,
I've talked to Saeed and I've talked to Jared about, you know, how they felt. But have you ever experienced anything like that?
Never. Like, I mean, we, especially in college, I mean, we got our season when I was in Ukraine this year. We probably had a month left and they canceled it, but that's not, like, that was just kind of crazy. You know what I mean? Just like, oh, it was just a shock. Like, wow, the season's over. Like, what do I do now? Like, I'm literally on vacation now. Like, that's insane.
Yeah.
But as a college senior, like, if my postseason got taken away from me, like, I probably wouldn't recover from it. That would stick with me, honestly. Like, I can't even, there's no way, kind of other way to put it. Like, that would kind of hurt me and that would like frustrate me. So I can't even imagine like how these seniors and stuff and that or like they got that taken away. Like, just even being a senior is just insane. But I mean, even if I was just a sophomore, you know what I mean? Just like it was even for people for fall sports like this year, like just being so like ready. I mean, obviously this has been going on, so maybe you could kind of see like it coming, maybe. But just still, when it becomes official that you're not gonna play a season, like, I don't, like, what do you do? You know what I mean? As a like college athlete. So yeah, I can't even imagine. It's really like a sad thing. But obviously, we're in a situation where there's other people are losing a lot more than just a season. So, like, they have to definitely keep that in perspective. Saying, like, I mean, it's people losing lives. So, definitely, keep that perspective and try to, I mean, that's the most you can kind of do to at least keep you even keel. Other than that, I mean, you're going to be pretty mad or sad about it.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It's a crazy time that we're living in. So,
yeah, 100%.
Hey, Kareem, that's all I had. I really appreciate you coming on and spending some time with me and talking about Grizz basketball. And I really appreciate it, man.
No problem. Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it. It was fun.
Yeah, it was fun. If you start into coaching, I'm going to have you back on, man.
Oh, 100%. I'll definitely. Why would I get into it? You'll be my first. You'll be my first guy. My first little interview. We'll do it for sure.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Well, you take care and best wishes with you and stay in contact. And hopefully we see you playing overseas, man.
Thank you, man. We will definitely stay in contact. Be safe and enjoy.
That's going to do it for another episode of Fight on Montana. I'd like to thank my guest, Kareem Jamar, for coming on and sharing his thoughts in his career at the University of Montana. Thank you for the listeners for listening. Remember, you can find our podcast on pretty much all podcast platforms. And until the next time, fight on.